Welcome to this series, Overcoming a Sense of Academic Failure, which has been prepared and produced through collaboration between me, Emily Trashenko, and the University of Oxford Career Service. Other voices are those of early, mid, and late career researchers within and beyond academia. They all have experience of some of the failure-related feelings we'll be exploring, and insights to share about how to understand them and what to do with them. If the material we cover raises questions or concerns in you, or has stimulated you to take action, we suggest you contact the Divisional Training Team or the Counselling Service or Careers Service at your university. And as we continue to build these resources over the coming years, we'd love to hear what you think of the podcasts, what resonated with you or helped you, what you think could be changed or added. You can find a web form on the Oxford Careers Service website at careers.ox.ac.uk/overcoming-failure. This is the last of our five podcasts, continuing our exploration of what to do about it all, and focusing in particular on personal actions. In the second of these podcasts on academic failure, we considered actions you might take with other people. In this final part, we'll explore some of our contributors' suggestions for personal actions. There is no hard boundary between shared and personal actions, nor between actions and attitudes. But here are some thoughts about steps that start very much with you. Talk. Silo working, looking inward, resisting sharing ideas or worries with others, is one of the most common barriers to accessing peer support that is ready and waiting. Yet it is the most easily overcome.
Some people are very much taken up both with their work and with their family commitments, and they zoom past you in the corridor and never have time to speak. Others do understand the usefulness of lingering in the coffee room, and it is in fact the only place where you get worthwhile information and where you make worthwhile decisions. The kinds of decisions that you make in meetings are usually not very good and unenforceable. So I do think that from a strategic, hard-headed work point of view, hanging around in the coffee room is one of the best things you can do.
When you talk, don't do either the false modesty, putting yourself down, or the endless stiff upper lip, holding yourself up. Bring up things that have gone badly with honesty and things that have gone well with pleasure. Others will respond in kind. You can make the talking part of your professional routine in the form of a regular informal event with your peers, like a weekly coffee and cake gathering, as we talked about in podcast 2. Or you can just experiment with it over lunch or at conferences.
And that's another thing that I would say you can advise people to do this exercise. And also ask, why do you think it was a failure? And it, maybe the answer is no, in the end I see it was no failure. And after sort of couple of interviews, job interviews, or now also people are being interviewed for grants, you could say, okay, was I prepared? Yes. And probably there was a person who fitted what they want better. Tough. And that's the right answer, which make you angry initially, but then you'll suddenly realize there is nothing to be angry about. And I would say, try to put yourself in the shoes of the committee. Try to look how the department is going, where they think. We don't always have these answers, but if we just can think about it, it's a lot easier and doesn't discourage us from the next trial. It's not all about you, this is very well said, yes.
As an exercise, write a different CV that includes a section on your failures. You can take a look at the companion document we've put together for contrasting examples of the form the CV of failures can take. Enjoy the process as well as the results. Update every time you fail at something new, as well as when you have new achievements to add. If you want, encourage others to do the same, then share, read, compare, laugh. You don't have to use this CV for stuff that matters, but if and when you find yourself in a position to do so, for example, once you've got a permanent job, you might decide you want to. What happens when you do?
I think that it is good to have to write one's CV periodically, although the fashions in CVs keep on changing, which of course always makes you feel like you're scrambling up a wall that has no top to it. But partly because you're aware that it's a fashion and a game, that calms you down a bit. And then you do examine your subjective CV, and you realise that it is very subjective and that you are not giving yourself credit for all kinds of things that you really have done, and that you also, of course, are fixating on things that you are very proud of having done that don't actually mean very much to other people, or that if you want them to mean something, you've got to take the trouble to explain them a bit more. And I think we're often very bad at doing that. So talking to people, explaining yourself, being asked questions in the way that you're doing, I think that's very helpful to everyone.
And would you advise people to go away and perhaps try writing their own subjective CV, as you've done? Have you found that that process in itself helpful?
I found it very helpful. In fact, it has triggered in me a diary-keeping habit. So instead of just writing down the fact that I've completed a certain piece of work or sent something off, I write a proper diary now. And that means that I don't have these gaps when I look back that otherwise you tend to have, because so much goes on that you don't remember things, or else so little goes on that you have the feeling that nothing has ever changed. And of course, things change enormously. I think it matters terribly that things drift away, partly because of my own background, which was very sort of lacking in family and in shared memories, which I think are very valuable. And if you have them, you should always cherish them and develop them and share them. But partly also because you cannot really stop repeating yourself, which is not very helpful, unless you can look back on things with a degree of accuracy.
Find a mentor and make a mentoring relationship work for you. Be open to others who might want to be mentored by you. Both could teach you a lot. Your department or college may have some kind of mentoring scheme in place already. If not, ask whether there could be one, or ask for help in finding someone.
Even within the university, I have peers who, when I would like feedback, I'm a firm believer in getting feedback, constructive feedback, or if I need someone's opinion in helping me put things in perspective or where I go next in my career, I've learnt to go to people whose opinion I trust. And I know that what they may tell me may not be what I want to hear, that I'm not quite ready to go for the next thing, or that this isn't quite good enough. But I'm very receptive to that. I've learned to be very receptive. As long as it's constructive, I have to remember I've gone and asked their opinion, and I will take their opinion on board. But I equally think it's important to have those kind of people outside your working life, because they bring a different perspective, and sometimes they see things that you don't see when you're within one environment. So I've done that. I've been involved in sport for a long time, and I think there's things that are very similar to an academic career. When you're involved in playing at high-level sport, there's the same drive, the same process, the same sense of failure maybe if you don't win, but then there's the same mechanisms for dealing with those as having perspective brought back into it. If I had advice to give to anyone, is if they're not sure, go and find someone they trust. Talk to them and then believe that person. You've asked for their advice if you trust them. You know, believe you're good enough.
Take up all the opportunities that come your way for personal development review. Demand thoroughness and honesty of yourself as well as the person who helps you conduct your review.
They should make a sort of short, middle, and long-range plan, yes? Because I think also leaving stuff which is unfinished causes great regrets and it saps your energy. So they could say, all right, I'm now a postdoc. Do I really want to go into second or third or fourth postdoc? If the answer is no, how much can I get now from what I'm doing? And so to get the feeling of satisfaction, because there is a big difference between complacency and feeling contented, yes?
Always get as much information as you can about the way your institution works. It is very easy to feel helpless if you don't know how things are supposed to work. That may not actually be the way they do work, but at least you're ahead of the game if you know that that is how they're supposed to work. And otherwise, you just feel that you are being pushed along by forces beyond your control. So I think that's one thing that you can always do and should do.
Make a viable alternative career plan and test it out. Try Herminia Ibarra's book, Working Identities, for tips on considering a new direction and on how to get tasters of alternative roles or sectors and evaluate them.
My main advice, I think, would be not to assume that you have to stay in Oxford and do it. I did an awful lot to make myself stay in Oxford because I was told that it was the best place to be, it was the only place to be, and you mustn't leave. And I think that cost me financially as well as academically. If I'd been more open to going somewhere else and not taking the job teaching at a sixth form college like everyone does, just so you can stay around in Oxford for the year before you can get your funding to do your master's, then I might have been in a lot better position and I'd have been exposed to different curricula, which would be brilliant, because Oxford does have quite a limited, in the humanities it still has quite a limited curriculum in each area, and that doesn't always, apart from anything else, it doesn't suit your academic style necessarily, and you might not realise that until you've been somewhere else. So I would encourage people who are here and finding it difficult to think about going somewhere else. And now, as part of the poetry scene even, I go up and do events at Brooks all the time. I've talked on their publishing course, for example. They have such incredible courses, but I would never have thought about doing it, and that's just ridiculous. So yes, think about moving. Think about what's outside of Oxford, because it seems like it's everything when you're here, and that can be quite overwhelming, but it isn't everything.
So think about moving to another university, or even think about leaving the university system?
I think now you could think about leaving the university system. Back then it was much harder, I think, to come back into it if that was what interested you 25 years ago or more, because the people on hiring committees had a very fixed idea of what made an academic career, and it certainly didn't involve going out of the university sector unless it was a very computing related role. I mean, we have some people who used to work for BT or Google and things like that, and it's fine to come back from that. But going out and doing something in business or the charity sector, for example, that would be it. But I think things are much more fluid now, so I don't think you have to be afraid to do something that you really want to do or to try something. And that comes back to failure again, I guess, that you can try something and it can be not for you and you can come back. I would love to see that being more possible. But I do think it's more possible now than it was a little while ago.
Don't forget to be a little bit playful within your own research too.
A lovely tutor of ours in Durham, whose ethnographic work is largely generated in South America, she writes beautifully, and I'd always admired her work. And her golden rule was just keep reading novels. Even when you're writing about something that doesn't appear to be something that would be nurtured or become more generative as a result of that input, she found that for her, subliminally, just having access to that free flow of writing and narrative was something that really helped her ethnography, and it certainly helped me.
If you feel you have no energy for any of this and feel constantly overwhelmed, find professional help, starting with the welfare team at your college or the university counselling service for students, or occupational health for staff or your GP, or anyone whom you trust to point you in the right direction.
I've found exercise really helpful. It's something I didn't do at school because exercise was team exercise, and team exercise meant getting bullied. It's something I discovered as a graduate. I lived in college accommodation in Lineker that just happened to be above a basement gym. I had no idea that it was to you that it was the centre of a massive powerlifting network, and I was wandered down there at 3 o'clock in the morning a lot of times, and there would be people in there powerlifting. And so I tried it out, discovered I loved it. More recently, I've taken up ultramarathon running as well, and I absolutely adore that. It's incredibly good for focusing the mind and also just letting go. If you're running on roads for hours on end, you reach this stage where you can just let go of everything, and it's absolutely fabulous. So yes, exercise has been really important to me. Writing as well.
Remember to rule nothing out. You are more than what you have already done. On the other hand, nor are you a perpetual work in progress towards fulfillment of your potential. You're just an organism, evolving as an individual and as part of a species.
I fail things all the time. I failed to sleep last night. I forget things. My memory is getting really bad. I went shopping this morning. I forgot 3 things to take with me, and I forgot 2 things while I was in the shops. And then I went back and I remembered these things. But when I went into the supermarket, I forgot a shopping bag. And I just, you know, I failed to do this. So when I get something right, I'm dead chuffed. The croquet mallet I've just finished has a very crooked handle. I knew it was going to have because I made the handle out of sycamore, and it's very hard to get a 3-foot length of sycamore that's straight, and I failed. On the other hand, it works, so that's a sort of partial success. And I had a brilliant idea in the night while I was lying awake, not sleeping. I thought maybe I could get hold of bamboo. Now, I've got a really nice walking stick that's made of a piece of bamboo, which is straight and strong and about the right diameter, about an inch in diameter. I bought it in the south of France when I stopped at a sort of bamboo forest. And so I'm now, even now as we speak, I'm online trying to buy some lengths of 3-foot lengths of bamboo, because I think bamboo might be rather good for a shaft of a croquet mallet. It's very light, it's very strong, it's very rigid. It may be too rigid, it may be too light, and the diameter may be wrong. But I think I may be able to make it work. So that is a theoretical success, which is all in my head at the moment. But give me a couple of days.
Create a plan of personal action and attitudes. Put it together from the suggestions here and keep an eye out for ideas elsewhere. And observe where it does you good and where perhaps harm. Continue to reflect on what the word failure means to you. What do you feel now when you hear or read it? What can you do with those feelings?
What does failure mean to me? I think it's probably, and this might be more of a hindsight perspective than an in-the-moment perspective, it's an opportunity to take another look at what's going on. It's a moment of emotional down. It's a moment of a disappointment at a certain level with oneself, with the world, with a bit of frustration, exasperation. But that's the immediate response, I suppose, and the next one is a really great opportunity to ask a few questions of the world, of oneself. And it can be quite a release. It can be quite a refreshing moment. I think the vulnerability, if one's prepared to share it and has someone or some others around one to really share it, then that can be really helpful because it puts all the cards on the table and you can separate. Okay, that's what's going on there, and the space in which you tried to put your work didn't receive it well for whatever reason. That's not a judgment on you. That's the context of this time and space. Many months, years later, in a completely other space, that kind of work that you do would be welcomed. And so, serendipity is the wrong word, but the chronologically and spatially spatial context of the moment helps remove the finality, or the feelings of finality that can come with this failure experience.
What does failure mean to you?
It's something which I regret, but it seriously depends on whether it only affects myself, in which case is a setback which I can manage, or whether it affects my relations with other people, in which case is very much more difficult to cope with, and realizing how far failure is a matter of internalizing other people's expectations. It's something which I've learned through talking about the experience.
I think sometimes we get too ingrained in what we do and feel too comfortable, and that's easy. And then you start measuring your then sense of failure, if you want to call it that, because you're in that comfort zone, you know what works and doesn't work. Whereas sometimes having that opportunity to go and try something new and really challenge yourself, I think you get a greater sense of, oh wow, you know, that could be a greater sense of success, and you won't get the same sense of failure because you don't know what the bar is, which I personally embrace. I like the idea of going and trying something new and seeing if I can do it. If it doesn't work, you learn something about yourself, and I think that's important. Life events teach us many things about ourselves if we're prepared to listen to them.
Finally, could I ask you what failure means to you?
Ooh, I feel a sort of feeling in my body, and I'm wondering how to express that. The easy way to express it is to say is that you want to do something and you fail. That's sort of too obvious. There are lots of kinds of failure that don't produce that kind of oh, I don't want to think about it, it's too horrible. In a way, you could say all my experiments, I did more than 20 experiments for my PhD and they all failed. that sort of failure is fine. Perhaps it's the failure that makes you feel a bad person that is what that hurtful feeling is about. I have failed because I'm not clever enough. I have failed because I'm not kind enough. I have failed because I'm just a bad person and I don't deserve whatever it is. I think that's the deeper sense of failure that comes over when you ask me that question.
Ooh, that's an open question, isn't it? You're not looking for a particular answer, you're looking for me to define what does it mean to me? Am I meant to say something inspirational or something advice-based? Failure is very easy to make cliched statements about. Certainly in the cultural world, we are taught that failure is the way to find really exciting new things. Failure is an essential part of success and an essential part of innovation. Failure is something to be embraced. It's not something to be feared. That's all cliches.
You're allowed to agree with cliches if you
want. I think those are cliches because they're true. I think failure is something as a society that we need to be, it's not just in academia, as a society we need not to be frightened of as a very wide thing. I'm giving a talk next week on mental health and basic income, and I think that's one of the underlying points there, is that giving people freedom to fail is essential, but we are obsessed with the society of having to earn and having to be worthy of and not scrounging, and that's all tied up with not letting someone fail. Because if someone fails on that model, they would end up with nothing. And I think we're never going to get anywhere as a society. As I always say, we're not going to get out of this century alive if we make people who fail end up with nothing. So yes, failure is something that as a society we need to be more accepting of.
Some things are not the failures that they seem. It's up to you to decide whether it is or it isn't.
And finally, can I ask you what failure means to you?
I think it is a very central part of my self-consciousness. And for different people, it will be, of course, it will mean different things and it will have different proportions. So for some people, it is an occasional thing which appears catastrophic because it's occasional. Maybe it is harder for people who experience it in that way to do something with it.
So it helps to have more.
Well, I wouldn't say that it helps. I mean, so you don't want to be an Eeyore. This is hardly the best way to look at life. But there are some advantages, some practical advantages.
And finally, could I ask you what failure means to you?
I think actually it means nothing at the moment. I came to the point, you know, that it's neither this nor that. Yeah. It's maybe the state I'm in now. It's just nothing to prove, nothing to achieve, nowhere to go. Things are as they are. It doesn't mean I do nothing, but it's different attitude, different mindset than it might have been even a few years back.
What are some sure signs that what you're doing is working? For one, feeling less afraid to talk about what you've tried, how it turned out, whether that was according to plan or the opposite, and what you're doing now. For another, being prepared to take a new step and to confront the new risks it brings with it more quickly than you were before.
There's this Japanese saying, which is my absolute favorite, 7 times down, 8 times up. And indeed, my Japanese colleagues do work that way, without failing.
So in conclusion, I think I'd only quote Samuel Beckett and say, fail better.
Your guide to success.
Remember, above all, that many people would say that the only failure is not trying. Remember that failing is a skill that needs learning and practicing. Remember that failure is often the mother of success, and that she can have many other interesting children too. And remember, finally, one last piece of collective wisdom that came from our event, Overcoming a Sense of Academic Failure, on which these podcasts are built. Remember that we are not failures.
Thank you for listening to the final instalment in our series of 5 podcasts on overcoming a sense of academic failure, which explored the personal actions we might wish to take in response to feelings of failure. If you would like to explore anything raised by this discussion, please consider contacting your university's careers or counselling service. And if you feel stimulated to take action as a result of what we've discussed, talk to your divisional training leads or, again, your careers service. Do also let us know what you think by completing the feedback form on the Oxford Careers website at careers.ox.ac.uk/overcoming-failure. At the same address, you can also find a written workbook on the theme of overcoming a sense of academic failure, which covers similar topics to these podcasts, but also includes visuals, CVs of failure from some of our contributors, and a list of other resources. Meanwhile, thank you again for listening. We hope you feel a little differently about success and failure now, and that you might change at least one thing, however small, in response to what you've heard.